All right, we are live on Facebook. Hello, friends. It's Friday, 5 p.m. happy hour on the East Coast. It's time for Margaritas with Margarita Cheng, CFP Pro. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, her publicist. So proud to be working with Rita and doing this amazing show, Margaritas with Margarita. And you are going to love today's guest, a fascinating, brilliant woman. I'm just going to throw it right over to you, Rita, so that you can take it away.
Well, thank you so much, Hope. And Lisa Morales, hello. It is an honor to be here with you. I'm so excited for Margaritas with Margarita today.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Lisa, earlier this month, we actually kicked off August with your business partner, Brian Long, away, and we are ending August with you. So it's great to hear from your perspective about refashions. And why does refashioning the supply chain of fashion matter?
Thank you for this question. So I personally, my focus is the refashioning of fashion supply chains, but Refashion Ventures exists under the umbrella of broader, the refashioning of global supply chains. And I'll start with global supply chains in general. We are at this inflection point, a moment in history that is quite significant in importance, not only for a number of reasons. So supply chains are being digitized for the first time in history. And that means we are developing currently from the ground up the single largest operating system to have ever existed on our planet, larger than computer OS, larger than the internet, larger than mobile OSs. This is where literally everything can now talk to everything else. Physical or digital, there's a blurring of the lines. And if everything in the physical world can talk to everything else, that's the biggest opportunity of our lifetime. Simultaneously, it is also, we're in full-on climate crisis. We are no longer talking about climate change. We are in full-on crisis. And since all human behavior is driven by supply chains, if we want to make the biggest impact on our planet, we need to start at the root cause, our supply chains, and how businesses have been prioritizing capitalism, extraction, and exploitation over how do we maintain life on this planet, because there's no market in a planet that cannot sustain human life. So let's start there for starters. And then fashion for me personally has been my obsession my entire life since I was a little girl. My grandmother was a seamstress in Puerto Rico and then in New York. I'm a New Yorkian, and I've always been obsessed with the industry, and it's kind of been a love-hate affair because fashion has never really, or at least when I was growing up, did not embrace people that looked like me. It was the blonde supermodel ideal, stick figures, you know, and I was not that. I was a curvy brown girl with curly hair, and, you know, nobody looked like me. And so, of course, you become obsessed with the thing that is rejecting you, you know, on every level. So I also believe that, you know, obviously fashion has one of the largest populations of brown women that work in this industry, and one of the highest levels of exploitation of its workers. So for me, fashion and the impact you can have in refashioning supply chains will have an inordinate impact on the quality of life for brown women, their viable own self-economic empowerment, and the impact on our planet. So what better thing could I dedicate the rest of my life to?
Well, thank you for that, Lisa. I know you kind of got to this a little bit earlier. And of course, what you're saying resonates with me. And you may not know this, but my firstborn daughter majored in supply chain management with a minor in sustainability studies. And what motivates her is she wants to care for people all on the supply chain. So I know that you told me the world is our supply chain. Kind of got to this a little bit earlier. What was the moment when you're like, that's it, I'm going to dedicate my life to supply chain?
You know, I think for me, it was a culmination of things. You know, I am very fortunate to have had a 20-year head start in on-demand manufacturing. And just having that 20-year head start, because I happened to work at a startup in Silicon Valley that was spun out of Procter & Gamble and funded by Redpoint Ventures, a huge fund in the Valley, where we pioneered the space of mass customization, personalization, and on-demand micro-manufacturing across cosmetics, skincare, haircare, and fine fragrance, all the way back in 1999. So that alone shaped a lot of the lens that I see the world through. And I became obsessed with what you could do, the efficiency, the increase in loyalty and retention and repeat purchases and value people put into something if they feel like it's personalized. And then, of course, the efficiency you have on your production side, where you're only producing after something has been purchased. What a concept, rather than it's entirely the opposite of everything that we've been building our globalized supply chains to look like. So I think it really happened after I founded the New York Fashion Tech Lab in 2014 with Springboard Enterprises. I built that because I had gone through the largest global tech accelerator, Techstars. And I realized most VCs and even that program at the time didn't have any insights into fashion or retail or supply chain. And I thought, if they're the biggest, oh my God, there's a massive opportunity for me to create an accelerator specifically targeting this audience of fashion tech and fashion supply chain. So founded the New York Fashion Tech Lab. Got all the C-suite executives, CIO, COO, CTO, and in some cases CEO, to come and hand select the companies they thought would add the most value to their bottom line. I thought, hallelujah, I've solved it. Yay me. I'm going to help all the best innovations come to market and we're going to save the planet. No, that is not what happened. And I was frankly a little pissed off that I put all this effort into trying to help the industry and they did not want to help themselves. So I think if you were to pinpoint one moment, that was it. Why are you still investing in shiny objects? It doesn't matter if you have a fancy new magic mirror in the fitting room, if your supply chain is broken. And systems, I'm a systems thinker. Systems 101. You cannot have an agile front end with a static back end. So the supply chain. And I said, you know what? If they won't fix it, I need to understand why everyone thinks this is the impossible thing to solve, and left to study the apparel supply chain on my own dime for a year. And that led me to fall in love with what's possible today and realizing that if nobody else is trying to fix it, somebody has to, and that might as well be me.
Absolutely. And then you co-founded the Worldwide Supply Chain Federation. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so Brian, my co-founder, and I, when we first met, it was basically because all of our mutual friends told us separately, you know who you should talk to that also loves supply chain? Because I don't, and I don't want to talk to you about it anymore, Lisa or Brian. So we met up for a coffee, and in that first meeting, we talked blah, 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 just supply chains for 2 hours almost. And in that first meeting, I said, Brian, I think I want to build a fashion supply chain vertical in a fund. And first meeting, he's like, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. I was like, great, screw you, why? So that is so Brian's personality too, and our rapport that has grown even more so to this day. So he said, frankly, because as a VC, I've spoken to thousands of people that want to work in venture or build a fund, and you are bar none, you need to have your own fund. I've like never said that to anyone, but you shouldn't work at somebody else's fund. You have to have your own fund. So I said, okay, well, you're fancy VC already at a fund. You're going to help me build mine and be my advisor. And he was like, sure. So a year later, after we became best friends and started talking like every day, he called me and said, I did a silly thing, Lisa. I need your help. And he said, I reserved the New York Supply Chain Meetup on meetup.com, shared it to my Facebook, and asked my friends if they would be interested in hanging out with me at a meetup about supply chain in New York. And because he's a fancy VC, he has fancy friends that follow him. And this company, Mattermark, that has exited since then, but they used to send out a newsletter to 150,000 people. And they did so the very next day, announcing Brian Longaway is founding the New York Supply Chain Meetup. And he was like, what? I didn't know. I didn't do that. I mean, I reserved a domain and I posted to my friends to ask if they would come. And, oh, I need some help, Lisa. I said, yay, you're starting a company. I can help you with that. And so we launched the New York Supply Chain Meetup initially, thinking in New York City, there has to be a community of people gathering to talk about supply chain. There was not. And so we built our event. The first event, we thought 30 other supply chain nerds would show up to hang out with us. And it was 150 people, standing room only. We had to kick people out at the end of the night, like, go home, you crazy kids. We'll be here next month. And yeah, they kept showing up. So we scaled and had instant inbound interest from around the globe. People saying, are you sharing your content? How do I start a chapter in my town? And so we franchised to create the Worldwide Supply Chain Federation. And we've scaled now in 4 years to 4,000 members on every continent except for Antarctica, and about 40,000 total in our global network of what we call our builders and buyers, founders and executives at Fortune 500s.
I love it. Congratulations, builders and buyers. So I'm not one for cliches, but it is true. If you build it, they will come, right? And they did.
Yeah, if you have something unique that is really filling a void, for sure.
So I know with sustainability, climate change, a lot of people, well, there are some people in one camp that don't believe that climate change is real. So we're not going to talk about those people. But we're going to talk about the people who want to know what role individuals, consumers can play to refashion fashion supply chain. What can they do? What can we do to empower listeners and viewers to make a difference?
Sure thing. I think the number one thing that consumers can do is to vote with their wallet. Frankly, that is the single biggest power lever that we as consumers have. And frankly, industry has spent billions of dollars trying to convince consumers it's all their fault that they're just not recycling enough or the right way. But it really is actually the fault of the business. There's no single thing that individual consumers can do, even if we all did it consistently, that would have close to the same impact if we forced industry to change their supply chains, to really force them to look at what is your impact on people, planet, and your profits, of course, but you don't have to sacrifice the first two to have the latter. And in fact, it's no longer tenable. All business in the future has to be collaborative. And the number one collaborator has to be this green orb marble we're spinning on. Because if we cannot build businesses that are aligned with our planet and our people on it, then we will no longer have, again, a market or humanity to consume your products. So how sustainable is that?
No, I'm with you. And right, exactly. I think that, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of times retailers, they would forecast these trends and they make so many things and then it wouldn't sell. Then you got to mark it down. Then it ends up what, in landfills. Did you even ask people if that's what they wanted?
Exactly. So that, what you just spoke about, that has a name in the fashion industry. It is referred to as dead stock. And that is exactly what it is. It is product that, think about this, insanity, where you grew fibers to spin thread, to weave textiles, to then dye chemically or lab dip and achieve certain color palettes, or print, and then ship to another country many times to have cut and sewn, and then put on ocean freight, ship around the world, merchandise, market, and try to move your merch. And what we've seen with that system is that about a third of that volume gets sold at full price. And then a third gets marked down substantially. And then the last third is generally pure dead stock. So the stuff that gets marked down and just never sells, even after 90% off, goes into the dead stock category. So that is the stuff that we did all that, and you think it's the end of the cost for the company to just get it to that point. No, no, no. It incurs more cost now just having product nobody wants. You then have to pay to take it out of the store, usually warehouse it, before it gets shipped to be landfilled or incinerated. And there's usually fees for that as well. Not only the fees, the monetary fees, but the chemical and carbon and impact fees on our planet. So that's where I started. Like, why have we convinced ourselves that a $2 landed cost of goods sold t-shirt is a viable model when the impact and the cost of that bloated infrastructure and forecasting and dead stock supply chain is untenable? You're really looking at a globalized supply chain having a baseline 30 to 40% margin erosion that eats at that bottom line profit because it's pure garbage. You're paying to produce, ship, mark down, and then destroy stuff that you knew would be garbage from the get-go.
No, I'm with you. It's like you knew that it was garbage at the get-go, and now you're paying to destroy the garbage.
It's insanity. And so now what people don't realize, the average consumer is starting to become more and more aware of, is that there are circular systems. And circularity has become the new buzzword to replace sustainability, which frankly, I get so angry. We have these amazing buzzwords, but who's doing anything about it? So circularity has replaced sustainability. And what that means is that in the traditional linear supply chain, you produce, you create value, you consume, you sell it, and then you destroy value. It goes to landfill or incineration. However, in a circular economy and circular supply chain, you are creating value, you consume it, and then it could be repaired, reused, recycled, remanufactured, redesigned, or regenerated. And that last category is really interesting and special and new, because regenerative supply chains really take into account that original asset you made was the fiber, cotton, let's say. And it can be broken down after all those cycles of reuse, repair. It's had many more times to be remonetized with that same original asset. And so in the old model, we're literally saying, okay, let's put all this money and resources into making that thing and then throw it out. You can make more money again and again and again on that original asset. But through regenerative textiles and systems, you can actually do things like take our old clothing, fully discarded post-consumer waste, stuff you send to Goodwill that you're assuming goes to deserving children in some third world country. They don't want it anymore. They're literally shipping it back to us. And so that textile waste that we used to send everywhere else, we're going to be drowning in our own textile waste in the U.S. shortly. We produce 4 times the textile waste of any other country in the world. And we are one of the few countries that is not even remotely starting to look at legislation mandating end-of-life repurposing of textile waste. So regenerative textile allows you to take this old t-shirt or shirt and use it as the raw material to break it down to its molecules, reconstitute it into new pulp, new fiber, new textiles, up to 4 times before it breaks down to its sugars. Then those sugars can be fed to bacteria to create new fibers. So we don't have to grow another fiber for generations. We have enough fibers to live off of and regenerate everything we need to produce and consume for generations.
I absolutely love everything that you're sharing with us. And circularity has now replaced sustainability, or that's the next frontier, if you will. Now, I wanted to ask you this. there's so much in this area. We could have you come back every week, right? We could talk about supply chains with clothing, supply chain with food, supply chain everything, supply chain of education, healthcare. If people want to read more about refashion and the amazing work you are doing, can you share some websites with us?
Oh, of course. Thank you. Yeah. So refashioned.com. And I'll say for all your listeners that we lose the ED. Like many startups, we can't afford all our vowels. So it's refashion and then the letter D.com. Refashioned.com is our venture fund website that has a ton of content and all of our latest media and articles and writings and things we're featured in, and talks like this will be posted to that website. The other website URL is long. It's the Worldwide Supply Chain Federation.com. And that has all the information about the community we've been building and the different talks that we post after we've had them. One of tremendous interest, actually two that we've done recently I'll mention, is on sequential decision analytics, which is frankly all it means, it's the next evolution in artificial intelligence. No big deal. But we have a friend in our community who spent 30 plus years at Princeton's Castle Labs as a professor, developing the research to be able to come up with this next evolution in artificial intelligence. And he shows all of his findings, his research, and how he actually productized it with his son to create the first company using sequential decision analytics. And the company is called Optimal Dynamics. They basically can take unknowable data sets that are constantly changing and train the algorithms, the AI, to make real-time decisions based on constantly changing unknowable data sets, because you start by mapping out what are the decisions that need to be made. How do you make those decisions? What data sets and inputs do you need to be able to make a decision? And if this data set, then what outcome would you make a decision as? So all other AI basically is just saying, like playing a game of chess, there are tons of permutations, but there are a finite number of outcomes and possible permutations. So it seems like a computer is smart and using AI to make real-time decisions that are way faster and more expansive than the human brain could make. But this allows you to make infinite number of unknowable real-time decisions on the fly using sequential decision analytics. And we have that talk up on our website.
That talk. And then was there another one that you wanted to mention?
Yeah. The other one is called What the NFT? And it basically is, you know, it was right after all the hype, the beginning of the year, everyone's talking about NFTs. And so we decided to bring in a number of different experts that have been in blockchain and NFT, and even on talking about the legal aspects of NFTs and what is ownership and proof of ownership and transfer of ownership and how do you own a digital thing and what are the tax implications, especially with resale and if you're selling it in crypto and all of those things. We just had a really frank, real conversation asking those questions, because everyone is sitting here going, what the NFT? What is it? How do it, is it just a digital object that you're buying and saying I own Nyan Cat as a meme? No, there's many more use cases. So we dug into all the questions that everyone has that nobody was really asking.
So we will make sure in the liner notes that we include that information. Thank you so much, Lisa. We so appreciate the time that you've taken to enlighten all of us. So now back to you, Hope.
Oh, that was amazing. Lisa, just genius. I want to absolutely feature you in Incandescent Women magazine with this. Oh. Yeah, this interview you've done with amazing, fantastic Margaritas with Margarita. just to talk about this, it's so important and it's so overwhelming, right? When we think about what the future looks like and supply chain craziness that no one really thinks about, right? You do. Yeah. You take your clothes and you put them in a bag and you hope for the best, right?
Yeah. Well, I was really angry when I learned how little people, tons of people were talking about it. There's literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars put behind studies. I'm like, we don't need another study. We just need to put money into the best emerging technologies that are creating the changes we need. And I'll end it on one last data point that shocked me. Fashion for Good and BCG in January 2020 put together a study to basically quantify everything I've been saying for a decade now. They also came to the conclusion we should put some data behind this. And what they found out is that for us to actually have the fashion industry achieve the sustainability goals they set for themselves, they would need to be deploying $20 to $30 billion every year between now and 2030, or between 2020 and 2030, to in just early stage fashion supply chain innovations, not even growth stage or later, early stage, pre-seed and seed, 20 to 30 billion every year. And I was asked in an interview, well, how many billions are they deploying? What's sad is they're putting all their money behind marketing that is generally greenwashing. And so they're not deploying billions at all. It's early stage VCs like Refashion Ventures. And collectively, I think I know all the fashion tech funds and fashion supply chain funds around the world. Maybe 100 million is being deployed. So we are off by such a magnitude, it should terrify everyone.
It is terrifying, right? Yeah, and the solutions, I'm looking forward to hearing more about them in the coming years, in these next generation of kids, because hopefully, there has to be something. So we will keep reporting on this at Incandescent and with Margaritas with Margarita. Thank you so much, Lisa. You are a gem. Keep doing what you're doing. Fantastic. Before we finish, let's tell the audience about next week's guest, Dana Wilson, founder and CEO of Chip, changing how individuals prosper.
So Dana Wilson will be coming to talk about her platform, which is changing how individuals prosper. It is a way to connect financial advisors who are underrepresented with consumers who are, I guess, overlooked. So this is actually, Brian taught me well. He told me that supply chain is really connecting producers with consumers. So Dana is actually going to continue with the theme of supply chain.
Amazing.
Yay! All right. Here's to Friday, 5 p.m. Margaritas with Margarita, Lisa Morales, Hellebo. You're amazing. Rita, thank you again for letting me produce your show. You're a doll. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern.